Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good afternoon and welcome. As Justin said, hopefully you've made yourself right at home. And whether you're here with us in person or whether you are still traveling around the country, welcome. One of the things I love is that coming out of weekends like this where we have so many people traveling, it's awesome to hear the stories of those who are watching at home with their families all around the country. It's amazing that we get to do that and what technology has made possible as far as how we can love one another and engage this journey together. But I'm really excited to be here today on this Thanksgiving weekend. I actually wasn't supposed to speak today. I wasn't scheduled to speak today, but I asked them if I really could, and they said yes. They said it'd be okay. So I'm here, but I didn't want to miss this. I didn't want to miss this because I'm incredibly passionate about this conversation that we're having and that the series that we're in the midst of called Drained. And for those of you who are new to Hoboken Grace, one of the things that we do here is that we usually take 4 to 6 weeks and we'll dive into this thing called a series where we'll work through a truth about who God says he is or a specific passage as God's communicating something to us, or we'll work through a truth of who God says we are, or the way that we experience him or relate to him. And right now we're in the middle of one of those series called Drain, and we're looking at this thing in our lives, this ability that we have to be able to literally drain the joy out of just about anything that we have, and this reality that we live in this constant state of discontentment, and that even when we have good things, again, we tend to, or we have this ability to, drain the life out of them. And it was really interesting. It was really interesting for me to be in the middle of this series and to be walking through this discussion as I walked into Thanksgiving week. Because I don't know if you guys experienced this, for those of you who've been on this journey with us, I don't know if you experienced this week as well, but this conversation was obviously just going on constantly in my mind. And then I'm encountering everything that comes with Thanksgiving, and it just highlighted for me again how much this is part of our culture. As we've talked about for the past couple of weeks, the truth is this is built into us. It's not our culture that causes this in us. It's just that our culture highlights this. From the moment that we walked away from God, from the moment that we said, you know what, God, you don't have everything that we need, that I need. You haven't provided everything that I need. I'm going to go look for something else. I'm going to go try to find it somewhere else. The truth is it's built into us, but our culture highlights this. It feeds this. And this week, it was so apparent to me because there's one day of the year that we set aside to be grateful for what we have. One day a year that it's a national holiday of gratitude. And you know what I spent most of the day doing on Thanksgiving? Looking at things I didn't yet have, because the sale starts at 6 o'clock. And you've got Black Friday right around the corner, and you get that newspaper, and there's 700 flyers in it. It seems like it gets bigger every single year, and it was amazing to me to sit there on Thanksgiving because I'm having this conversation in my mind, and I'm watching what's happening, and I realized that we've hijacked the one holiday that we have to be grateful. The holiday that we set aside to be grateful, we now use as basically a preparation time for when we'll be able to get more stuff the next day. And I found myself constantly being pulled back to Amazon's lightning deals and deals of the day, and what's going to be the cheapest TV tomorrow, and some of you right now are on like 16 watch lists for Cyber Monday, and you've got all your items picked out and you've got your shopping list ready, and it's crazy. And unfortunately, I think for many of us, and I would ask you to show of hands who does Black Friday, but I know I learned in the first service no one's willing to admit it. So, but it's amazing to me how many of us spent the day of the year set aside to be grateful, how many of us spent it focused on what we didn't have instead of what we did. We live in a constant state of discontentment. But yet, as we talked about 2 weeks ago. But God steps into our lives and says, this doesn't have to be your story anymore. And we've been looking at this incredible dream. This incredible dream that God brings into your story and my story. It's found in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11. It says, not that I was ever in need. And this is Paul talking about his journey with Christ and what he's experienced in this journey with Christ. He says, not that I was ever in need, for I've learned how to be content with whatever I have. And I cannot stress this enough. I cannot stress this enough. Paul doesn't say, I'm struggling with. Paul doesn't say, I'm working towards. Paul doesn't say, I'm praying for. He doesn't say, I'm learning. He doesn't say, I'm hoping that this happens. He says, no, this is my story. This is my reality. My reality is that I no longer live in that state of discontentment. I've learned how to be content. And with those words, God uses his story to share an unbelievable message of hope with you and me. That this can be our story too. We don't have to constantly live in that state of discontentment, in that world where we're constantly looking for what we don't have. And it's crazy. Our mind, the way our mind works when discontentment starts to take root in us is insane. And the lies that we're able to tell ourselves. I was flipping through the Amazon deals the other day and I'm looking at what's coming up and I saw this really good sound system. And I thought to myself, I need a really good sound system. And then you start to justify. You think to yourself, as a father, I think I have a responsibility to provide good sound system to my kids. I mean, obviously, it's about them. It's about caring for my kids. I mean, what if one of my kids is going to grow up to be a musician? They need to hear good quality music. It's sick what happens in us when discontentment starts to take root. But Paul says, no, this doesn't have to be your story. It's no longer my story. It doesn't have to be your story either. So how do we do that? How do we do that? Last week, we began to lay the foundation for this and looking at Paul's life. Okay, how did Paul do this? What did Paul change? What adjustments did Paul make that this became his story, that this became his reality? And we saw the first thing is not that Paul stops comparing. And usually what we say is that we need to stop comparing. It's not that Paul stops comparing. It's not that Paul compares to someone who has less than them, which is another thing we usually tell each other. That, listen, you just have it better than so-and-so, so you should feel content. Paul doesn't do that. No, Paul actually lives in a constant state of comparison. He doesn't stop comparing. He just changes his baseline or he changes what it is that he compares to. It's not another person. It's not what he used to have. It's not what he's going to have in the future. He begins to compare and he lives in this constant state of comparison, comparing where he is and what he has to what it is that he deserves. And he's constantly looking at what it is that he actually deserves, and what he deserves is to die. And he lives in this constant state, this realization that what I deserve is to die for what I've done, for the mistakes that I've made, for the way that I've hurt people, for the way that I've betrayed the people around me, for the way that I've treated God in the past. I understand that what I deserve is to die, but the reality is that Jesus Christ gave his life for me so that I could be forgiven, so that I could experience his love, so that I could be reunited with my Father who loves me most. He lives in this constant state of comparison of what he deserves and what he had been given. This unbelievable life that he'd been given. And so whether he had much or whether he had little, it didn't matter. He lived content. Because he changed the baseline. He changed what it was that he compared to. And so last week we began to lay the foundation for this. But as I'm sure you experienced, as I'm sure all of us experienced to some extent or the other, this is unbelievably fleeting. So some of you walked out of here last week and you thought to yourself, yeah, that's it. I see what I deserved and I see what God's done for me. And you were filled with contentment and you were overwhelmed with gratitude and what God had done and what's happened in your life. And that lasted all of Sunday for some of you. And for some of you, it even lasted all of Monday. But then on Tuesday, you found out that your coworker was getting promoted and that you're not. And it ended. And instantly, all of a sudden, those feelings of discontentment started to come up inside of you. I remember for me exactly when it ended this past week. because this past week for Thanksgiving, we drove out to my sister's house to celebrate Thanksgiving there. And I remember getting out of the van and I walked into her house. I've been to her house before, but I walked into her house and her house is massive and it is beautiful. It's like 3 years old. It was just brand new built. And we walked in this house and it's huge. And I walked in there and I looked up at the giant ceiling and I thought about the locker that I live in Hoboken. And immediately, these feelings of discontentment started to come up inside of me. I'm like, man, why is it that they get to live in a space like this? And I've got so many kids, and we're crammed in this tiny little apartment. And these things start to come up inside of us. And my sister lives in Detroit, where you can buy a mansion for $5. And I'm just looking at it like, this is not right. And it's amazing. It's fleeting. It's fleeting. All of us know this because we've tried to hold on to it in the past, but we can't hold on to it. And as hard as we try, it just seems to consistently slip away. And so for some of us, we've given up on the idea that it could ever actually be our reality. But Paul says, no, you can learn this. So how do you do that? There are some other things that Paul talks to us about that are so important in this. And we underestimate these things, which is why I wanted to be here and personally talk to you about them today. Because we underestimate them, and we underestimate them to our detriment. Because Paul, when he's talking to us about growth, there's a couple of really important things that he says that you need to hold on to in everything that you're learning and all the different ways that you're trying to grow and your experience of and how you're following Christ. The first one is this. Paul, when he talks about growth, he says one of the most important things in growth is the transformation of our minds. He talks about this in Romans. He's talking to the church at Rome, and he says, listen, as you're learning to follow Christ, one of the things that has to happen, one of the really important things in your life is that you transform your minds. In other words, you have to change the way that you think. You have to change the way that you think about the world around you. This is very important in contentment. We have to change the way that we think. The world, our culture, is bombarding us with messages constantly that are training us to think a certain way. And we've thought this way for a long time. That's why we don't need someone else to manufacture discontentment for us. We have the ability to do it ourselves because we've been trained to think this way. We're constantly thinking about what's next. We're constantly thinking about what we don't have as opposed to what we do have. We have a thought process. Paul says, you have to change the way that you think. And how do you change the way that you think? This is so important. This is so important because many of us think, okay, I'm going to change the way that I think by learning a new truth. And learning truth is very, very important. It's very, very important. But it is not the primary way in which we transform our minds. The primary way in which you transform your minds is through disciplined habits. It's through disciplined habits. It's through consistent, disciplined habits. It's the same way that you've been that you have actually been trained to think in discontentment, right? You've been trained that way. One, it's built into us, but then two, through the consistent message of manufactured discontentment, it's trained you to think a certain way. Now, you need to engage consistent, disciplined habits to change that thought process, to change the way that you think, transform your mind. It's not going to happen by you just learn this spiritual diet pill truth that's going to change everything. That's not the way we grow. We grow through acting in faith based on truth, which has to do with consistent, disciplined habits. And when it comes to contentment, again, this is very, very important that we step into discipline. Hebrews talks about discipline and the role that it plays in our lives. He's in the book of Hebrews, the writer's actually talking about how God does this in our lives, how he disciplines us. Sometimes we misinterpret that passage and people will say that God's punishing us. That's not true. Jesus Christ took all of the punishment for us on the cross. That's not what he's talking about in Hebrews. He's talking about discipline. And the picture that he uses is the way that a coach trains a runner. And so as a runner is learning how to be able to run the race well, the coach consistently brings in disciplined habits or things that you're going to practice day after day after day after day after day, or difficult things that you're going to have to run through so that you can run well when you get to the race so that you can succeed in the race. It's this idea of discipline. It's incredibly important in our lives as we're transforming our minds that we're engaging consistent discipline habits. And there are specific ones, that God calls us to that have an incredibly powerful impact on this area of contentment. And so what I want to do today, we've laid the foundation, right? We need to exist. We need to live in that constant state of comparison of what I deserve and what I have. So how do I stay there? I stay there through consistent discipline habits. Some of them you already do. You're just not using them as it pertains to transforming your mind concerning contentment. So, for example, one of them that you already do is communion. Many of you take communion here at Hoboken Grace. Justin comes up here, Anthony comes up here every week, and tells you about the communion tables around the room where you're able to go and remember. Part of the importance of communion, and one of the things that God uses communion to do in our lives, is that he uses it to call us back to that baseline that we talked about last week. He uses it to call us back to the reality of what I deserve and what I've been given. It's a constant reminder of it, week after week after week. Why? Because it's fleeting. It's fleeting. We needed to be reminded of it over and over and over again. That's why it's very, very important that you take communion every week. Very, very important that you take communion every week, because it's a consistent reminder. It's a chance for you to transform your mind, because you go to that table, and if you look at the passage from 1 Corinthians that's on that table, one of the things that Paul calls you to do as you take the step of communion is to inspect your life, right? To look at your life, to evaluate your life. And he doesn't do that. Sometimes I've heard people say that the reason Paul calls you to inspect your life is to see whether or not you're good enough to take communion. You're never good enough to take communion. If you ever inspect your life and think you're good enough to take communion, you shouldn't take communion. And that's actually what Paul's trying to do in their lives. He's saying, listen, don't take communion arrogantly. Don't take communion with entitlement, right? Believing that God owes you instead of you owing him. He says, no. Evaluate your life. When you evaluate your life, here's what all of us learn. I don't belong at the table. When you evaluate your life, every single one of us look at our lives and say, you know what? I don't deserve for Jesus' blood to be shed for me. I don't deserve for his body to be broken for me. And Paul says, when you take communion, you need to remember that, so that you can experience God's grace, that even though you didn't deserve it, he gave his life for you. What is that process? That process is teaching you, it's transforming your mind. It's teaching you to think in a specific way, to remember over and over and over again, what do I deserve and what have I been given? What do I deserve and what have I been given? Communion is the practice, of calling you back to that baseline, the foundation of contentment. You need to do it every single week. And I know for some of you that's difficult. I know for some of you that's difficult. It used to be easier, but now the problem is, because Justin and Anthony, they tell you every week you can go at any point during the service. But the problem is our band's getting better. And so no one wants to get up and leave during the songs. And I'll talk to people and say, you know, you need to be taking communion. They say, I don't really want, I love this, I love worshiping with the band, and I love being a part of that. Listen, you can sing on your way there. It's okay, all right? That's fine, but it's more important than you think. Don't neglect it. Don't neglect it. And we're working through ways to be able to give people more time for that and how to be able to make sure that we're doing that on a more consistent basis. Don't neglect it. It's a practice. It's a disciplined habit that transforms your mind. It changes the way that you think about what you've been given and what you deserve. For those of you who want to take this to the next level, right, this is kind of extra credit, if you will, okay? If you want to take this to the next level, here's what you do. Don't just celebrate communion here. When you look at Jesus and as he's talking to his followers and giving them what we celebrate as communion, or what we practice as communion, he's sitting at a table with his followers, and he says to them, Listen, every time you do this, and he picks up two things that would be at every single Jewish table. He picks up the cup and he picks up the bread. It would have been at every table, every meal. And he says to them, every time you do this, remember what I've done for you. What if rather than just praying before we eat and thanking God for the food, what if you turned that into an exercise of remembrance of what Jesus has done for you? That you take a second to take the cup and to take the bread and just say, you know, I want to call myself back to the reality of what I deserve and what I've been given. And I want to challenge some of you to take it to the next level. Take it to the next level. Bring it into another part of your life. And maybe it's something that you celebrate with your family once a week where, you know what, Wednesday nights when we have dinner, we're just going to take a second to call us back to this, to celebrate communion together as a family or as a couple. Or maybe you and just a couple friends as you get together that you're going to sit down and you say, okay, we're going to remember what we deserve and what we've been given. We're going to remember how his body was broken to make that possible, how his blood was shed to make that possible. Bring it into more of your life. It's one of those disciplined habits that changes the way that you think, and you need to be reminded of it over and over again because it's fleeting. It's fleeting. When you look at the passage in Philippians where we see this incredible hope in Philippians chapter 4, before he gets to his experience of commitment, he actually talks to them about specific things for them to be able to practice or to put into practice in their lives. Listen to what it says. The verses that are right before he gets to that point where he says, I've learned to be content. Listen to what he tells them to do. Philippians chapter 4, beginning of verse 4, it says, always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all that you do. Remember, the Lord is coming soon. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you've learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. And he gets to the end of it. He says, you need to put these things in practice. These need to be consistent, practiced, disciplined habits in your life. And he talks about some specific things. He talks about some very specific things right before he introduces them to his experience of contentment. And I think that they're tied together. I think he's calling them to the things that allow him to be able to live in contentment. Habits that need to be a part of our lives. The first one is interesting. The first one is interesting. And I would bet that if we were to go around this room and I were to say, okay, what are the habits that are important in your life for contentment? I would bet that there would be only maybe a handful, if any people at all, who would give us this first habit. And that is this. Listen to how he starts off. Don't ignore it. Listen to how he starts off. He says, always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again. Rejoice. Okay, now sometimes when I bring up this idea of joy, people will say to me, Chris, okay, that's joy. That doesn't mean you're actually happy. Just in case you think that, Paul uses the word rejoice. Okay, rejoice is the idea of celebration. It's the idea of happiness. It's the idea of being excited about something. And I know whenever we bring up this idea of joy, people are like, oh, yeah, joy, I have incredible joy. And they're miserable. They're miserable. I'm like, I don't think that's what the Bible's talking about. And the idea of joy doesn't mean that you're always happy. It's not that you're pursuing happiness. It's possible to experience incredible joy in the midst of sorrow. It really is. But a big part of joy is rejoicing. It's celebrating. It's being excited. And Paul says, you need to do this. He doesn't say to them, hey, listen, it's great when you get excited about something. Or he doesn't say to them, listen, you need to be able to enjoy certain things. No, he says, you need to practice. He says, always be full of joy in the Lord and rejoice. Just in case you missed it, again, I'll say it, rejoice. He says, you need to get excited about what God's doing in your life. You need to get excited about the good things. We have this terrible habit in our lives of experiencing the fullness of the valleys. And we experience all of the sorrow, and we experience all of the pain, and we experience all of, but when it comes to experiencing the good things that God's doing in our lives, when it comes to experience the mountaintop, we undermine it. We cut it short. For some reason, we'll always cut it short rather than being really excited. I think part of it's pride, because when you get really excited, you look really stupid, right? You know that. If you get really excited, I remember watching the Patriots win the Super Bowl last year, and this was especially personal for me because I'm a Michigan fan. Tom Brady came from the University of Michigan, and there's an individual inside of our church who likes to make fun of me about this a lot. And he just rubs it in my face whenever the Patriots get accused of cheating or Tom Brady, anything. And so we're watching the game together, and the whole time Seattle's driving the ball down the field at the end of the game, it looks like they're going to win. The whole time, he's just running his mouth. Oh, your boyfriend's going to lose again. Oh, he's just running his mouth on and on and on and on and on and on. And I'm just sitting there having to take it. And I'm getting angry. But then they threw that interception. And I started screaming like a little girl. And I was in his face. And I was like, intercept, you know, and going crazy. I woke up my friend's kid. That wasn't good. But I was, you're so excited and you're rejoicing. And sometimes I think from pride, we hold back because we don't, you know, I gotta be cool. It's like that saying, you know, act like you've been there before. Oh, it's no big deal. Yeah, I know. I got this. This happens to me all the time. Great things just happen to me all the time. It's not a big deal. I'm not going to get excited about it. I'm way too cool for that. Paul says, no, you need to rejoice, man. You need to get excited about it. You need to experience the fullness of the high of the mountain, just like you experienced the fullness of the valley. You need to take it in and you need to celebrate. A couple years ago, we walked out of a baptism here at Hoboken Grace. And we had just seen several people come and declare that they had been made new and that they were born again, that God had done this amazing thing in their life. And we walked out, and I was standing by the door, and as people were exiting, they were saying to me, you know, and several people came up to me and said, yeah, this was great. This was great. It was a great day. It was like the most boring thing I'd ever been a part of. It was just boring. The whole thing was boring. I walked into our staff meeting the next day. I was like, this is, something's wrong. This is not right. We are not celebrating. We're not celebrating what God's doing. We're not celebrating baptisms. This is the whole point of what we do. I mean, what is happening that we're not excited about this? It was just a short time later that I was watching the Spurs win one of their many championships. And I watched them walk into the locker room, and all of a sudden they're spraying champagne on one another, and they're celebrating, they're rejoicing. And I was like, I wonder if we could do that. So I walked into our staff meeting the next day, and I said, you know, with the next baptism, what if we just, you know, popped a couple bottles of champagne? They're like, you can't do that. You're a church. You're not allowed to do that. I said, let's just try it and see if everybody leaves. Let's just try it. Let's see what happens. And so we did. And the important thing isn't the champagne. The importance is this. We've got to celebrate. We can't shortcut it. We can't undermine it. We can't downplay it. Can't act like we've been there before. We haven't been there before, and it's great. It's great. It's amazing. We need to celebrate those things. When you're in a dinner group and someone shares a story that's amazing, don't just be like, man, that's good stuff. That's good. No, celebrate. Man, that's awesome. That's exciting. This past week, I sent out with my email on Thanksgiving, I sent out our impact report. I don't know how many of you got a chance to be able to see it. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. Go to hobokengrace.com/impact report. You can do it now. Don't even listen to me for the rest of the message. It's great. You need to see it. It's amazing. When you look at what God's doing in our family, it's amazing. And we should be celebrating. It's incredible. It's incredible. And Paul says, rejoice. Rejoice. It's not a suggestion. It's actually a command. It's a command. Rejoice. I remember listening to one of my mentors years ago, and he was talking about this, and he said something that haunts me to this day. He said, as Christians, as followers of Christ, we're not going to be successful on this mission until we learn how to throw better parties. And he said it, and it just hit me. It bothers me today It still bothers me today. And when I heard it, I thought to myself, man, is that ever true? Is that ever true? I mean, my friends who are followers of Christ invite me to a party. I'm like, oh, that's going to be boring. My friends who don't know Christ invite me to a party. I'm like, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. What is wrong with that? We have more to celebrate than anyone else. You need to develop. It's crazy that we have to be told this. You need to develop the habit of celebrating. And when you engage those good things in your life, man, enjoy it and celebrate it. It's important. It's important in contentment because it reminds you of how much you're loved. It reminds you of how much you're loved, how God's providing for you. Don't take it for granted. Celebrate. As he continues, he gives us a couple of other things that are important. He says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. You need to develop a consistent, disciplined habit of prayer, specifically as it pertains to the things that worry you. Worry is when we encounter a situation that we can't control, and so we try to figure out how the dominoes are going to land, and we try to control how those dominoes are going to land. And so we're trying to figure out at work, how's this going to work out? And if I say this, and if I do this, and we're trying to control the dominoes, and we're trying to figure out, okay, how to be able to work this to our advantage. And that's what worry is. Sometimes we like to call it strategy. It's not. It's just worry. We have no control of what's going to happen. We're just worried about it. And Paul says, stop doing that. You can't control the dominoes. You're not going to be able to figure it out anyway. He says, you need to pray about those things. Give those things to God. Trust his plan and his will in your life. Trust him to be able to take care of the dominoes. And it doesn't mean that you stop having the conversation about the situation. It's that you start having it with him instead of yourself. Start having the conversation with him instead of yourself. When you do that, it takes the pressure off you. It puts it on him, and he can handle the pressure. You can't. The consistent practice, the discipline of prayer, as you find yourself in the midst of worry, pray. Pray. Not just about some things, any things that are causing you to worry. Consistent discipline practice of that. It says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done. You also need to develop a consistent practice of gratitude. And for many of us, we do find ourselves in situations where we're grateful. We'll take a second to remember that we're grateful. But the problem is, it's not a routine habit for us. It's something that we do when we think of it or when it comes up or when the moment arrives. I think that when you look at Paul, especially his writings, because it shows up so much for him, I think this was a consistent practice of his. And as he's talking to them, he says, no, you need to practice this. You need to thank him for what he has done. The scriptures talk about this a lot. In Psalm 100, it says, enter his gates with thanksgiving. Go into his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. Giving. That you're going before him and saying, God, I'm thankful for what you've given me. I'm thankful for what you've done. You need to build that into your routine in some way, shape, or form. Maybe you set aside one day of the week where your quiet time, your time with God, is going to be focused on giving thanks. And you're just going to go through and remember all of the good things that he's given you, as many of them as you can. Maybe you build it into how you experience communion here on Sunday morning. So you come in and you just decide, you know, before I go take communion, I'm just going to jot down four or five things that I'm grateful for. And the way that God's taken care of me, the way that God's provided for me, the way that God's loved me. It can't just be something that happens occasionally. It has to be something that we build into our lives consistently, a consistent, habitual practice in our lives of expressing and remembering what it is that we have to be grateful for. When you look at this passage in Psalm 100, it talks about entering into his gates with thanksgiving. For some of you, one of the ways that you might be able to do it is that when you arrive here on Sunday mornings, just get here 5 minutes earlier. I know for some of you, that means that you would just arrive on time. But even if that's the case, just get here a little bit earlier and just spend a little bit of time before you jump into the song or before you jump into the service, just practicing gratitude. You don't necessarily have to change your whole life in order to make this happen. It's a small thing, but if you will consistently practice it, the power of it is life-changing. And again, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I know that these things are simple. And so one of the things that happens when we talk about simple things is that we have a tendency to shrug them off. We have a tendency to shrug them off. But it's the practice of these simple habits where we find the power to actually change, to actually grow. Don't underestimate the power of these things. It's these simple habits in our lives that have the ability to change everything. We talk about this when we talk about spending time in God's Word every day, and we mention it over and over and over and over again. But for some of us, we look at it and we say, it's too simple. It's not really going to change anything. And the truth is, the enemy wants that to be the lie that constantly you live with. Because he knows if he can keep you from developing disciplined, consistent habits of these simple things in your life, then he can keep you from being a powerful force for God's kingdom. He knows that. And so he tries to convince us that they're just simple, that they're not really going to make a change, but they do. They change the way that we think, and as a result, they change the way that we're able to follow, and that changes our ability to impact the world around us. Don't underestimate these things. Don't just listen to them and hear them and walk away and not put them into practice. Figure out, okay, how can I build into my life a consistent practice of gratitude? It doesn't have to be a big thing. Just build it into something that you already do. A ritual that you already have. A routine that you already have. It needs to be a part of our journey. It's crucial in being able to think as Paul thought, experiencing contentment. The next one is actually found a little bit earlier in Philippians, but in Philippians chapter 4, he says something at the end of this passage that actually called me back to something that he said earlier. So at the end of this passage, he says, "And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about these things that are excellent and worthy of praise." And as he says that, it actually reminded me of something that he said earlier in the book of Philippians in chapter 2. In chapter 2, verse 14, he says it, but he says it in the opposite way. He says, "Do everything without complaining and arguing." And so in the book, he's teaching them, listen, you need to change what it is that you're focused on. He says, rather than complaining and arguing and focusing on the negative things, as he gets to the end, he says, no, you need to think about the things that are lovely and pure and right. He says, you need to think about the things that are good. So you have to eliminate complaining. And this is another one of those disciplined habits. You need to eliminate complaining. He doesn't say you need to complain less. That's not what he says. He says, you guys need to tone down the complaining. You need to complain a little less. He says, no, you need to stop complaining. You need to eliminate it. I know some of you are thinking, I don't know what I would say. I don't know what I would talk about if I don't complain. And the reality is that's kind of part of our existence. We complain a lot. And we're focused on the negative and focused on the everything that's going wrong. And Paul said, no, fix your things, your mind on what's good and what's right and what's lovely. He said, stop complaining. Stop focusing on those things. You need to stop complaining. You need to view complaining in your life like a curse word. Or you just say, you know what, that doesn't happen here. Couples, in your household, it needs to be. That doesn't happen here. No, we don't do that. We don't do that. The first couple times you say that to one another, it will probably cause a fight. But if you will maintain it, it can be a really powerful thing in your lives. Don't complain. Eliminate complaining. Find someone who can work with you in this, a partner, one of your friends. Go through this together. We say, you know what? When you hear me complaining, you just call me out. Call me out. I want to eliminate complaining. View it the same way that you view a curse word. I know some of you are thinking, I'm not all that successful with the curse words. But all of us know how to do this because there are certain things that we don't say in front of certain people. Eliminate complaining. Say, you know what? I'm going to develop the habit of eliminating complaining. No more. As Paul steps into our life, and as God uses Paul to step into our life, he brings to us an incredible hope that your story, rather than it being a story that's filled with discontentment, that your story could be a story of contentment and peace. Let me just ask you again. Let me just take you back to the question that we had week one. What would your life look like if you were content? Let's just make it a little simpler. What would your past week have looked like if you were content? How much would you have enjoyed this past week more if you were content? How much more money would you have today if you had been content this past week? Who would you have loved better if you had been content this past week? This is a bigger deal than just how we feel about our stuff. It's at the core of our ability to love God and love the people around us. And Paul says, your story does not have to be a story of manufactured discontentment. You can know a life that's content. But it's not going to happen because we learn some magical truth. It's going to happen because we decide to put into place disciplined habits. And you know what I'm excited about? You know what I'm excited about? Some of you are going to do it. Some of you are going to do it. And your life is never going to be the same. And you're going to experience something very, very, very few people ever do. You're going to experience a story of contentment. And not only will your life be different, but the lives of everyone around you will be different. And God will be glorified in your life in powerful ways. Because the world will look at you and say, I don't understand. They're able to enjoy life in a way that I can't. Some of you are going to do it. And my prayer is that it wouldn't just be a few of us, but there would be many of us, that there would be many of us who would grab hold of the hope that we've been given, that we would put into practice what we need to put into practice so that we might be a family, that we might be a family that displays the beauty of God to the world around us because we live a story that's content. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that this message of hope would be something that would light a fire in us, that would drive us to follow you and what it is that you've called us to do as it pertains to gratitude and prayer and remembrance. Father, I pray that we truly would be a family who lives a story of contentment. not just so that we would feel differently about our lives, but more importantly, that we would be able to love you well, that we would be able to follow you well, that the lie of discontentment would not pull us away from the one who has loved us most, which is you. Father, I thank you for what you've done. I thank you for what you've made possible. Father, we just want the world to see the full beauty of that. In Jesus' name, amen.